We're very proud of you. By the way, apologies for being late, everybody. It's Greg's mechanic.
Why would you
blame him? But I'm very proud of you. I just got an email from someone about you. I get emails about you every now and then. Did you know that?
Are they from important people?
This guy is.
Hey, let me rephrase that question. Is it from somebody who could get me to pass a goddamn Virginia State car inspection?
What is it, emissions testing?
Which I just... No. My emissions are fine, sir. My emissions are awesome.
I don't know. I've seen your diet. I know your Taco Bell diet. I would argue your emissions are flawless. Trust me.
I have flawless emissions. What I have, though, is threads on my belt. I got a belt in the car. The belt controls the power steering. I have threads on the belt. They're worried that the belt's going to come flying off the car.
Yeah.
And so I will be paying to get it fixed this afternoon ahead of my trip to Sochi. And lo and behold, it'll be at the place that found the error. Wow, it's crazy how that works out, right? Guys find the error and, whoa, crazy. We've got the belt in stock. We could do it for you this afternoon.
I don't know what you're trying to imply about mechanics.
God damn it.
Just, you know what?
Oh, America, it makes it crazy.
Dude, you run a very successful hockey blog. Just go in the backyard, pull some money off the tree, and give the nice man with the grease on his overalls some money to fix your car.
Before you tell me about the awesome email, did I ever tell you the story? I told you the story about my car catching on fire, right? When I was in college, I drove something called the Teal Mobile. It was a teal Plymouth Acclaim.
Oh.
And it was a very hot ride.
You were single?
I got laid all the time.
Oh, yeah. Okay, sure.
So I don't know if I told this on the show or not. So I used to drive it, and the car would literally catch on fire. The engine would catch on fire. There, smoke would billow through the AC unit in the car. It would come out of the hood. Sometimes it would block my vision. It was just smoke. It was never really a lot of fire. It was just a lot of smoke. To the point where
that would terrify me to drive that car.
It did a little bit, but it would only happen now and again. And usually it would happen towards the end of my journeys because I wasn't really driving all that far. So, one part of the story is the fact that one day at Blockbuster Video, I had to run inside, grab 5 bottles of Dasani water, run back out to the car and pour it on the car because the car was on fire. But the other part of the story is that mechanics would look at this car.
Did you wait in line?
No, I just grabbed it out of the freezer. Yeah.
But did you pay for it? Say, hey, bud, I'm coming back to pay for these. My car's on fire.
No.
Did you stand there and pay for it?
No, I worked there, so they knew.
Oh, okay.
They knew it was good for it. And then the other thing about it was I took the car to a number of different mechanics, and they all diagnosed it a different way. Oh, it's your flange. It's your blah, 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 whatever.
Flange?
Turned out to be the oil cap on my car was misformed. So the oil would occasionally come splashing out onto the engine, causing smoke.
So the dealer pays for that then to fix it.
I forget who paid for it, but the point is that like I took it all these places and like the simplest thing was overlooked by these guys who were simply trying to upcharge me for, well, what you knew, you got to replace the chassis is what you got to do. Oh, yeah. If you replace the chassis, you should be fine.
What would happen if you ordered a pizza one day and it showed up in like, I don't know, 20 minutes or 30 minutes, however long it takes to get pizza at Greg Wyshynski's house. And the delivery guy said, yeah, I know we said it was going to be $21, but... You know what? These red peppers, you know, they really didn't take in the oven. And it took a little longer than we thought it would. So, yeah, it's going to be $25.
Yeah.
What would you say?
I would slam the door in his face.
But the mechanics get a free pass.
But the mechanics, you know why? You know, I'll tell you exactly why. Because the mechanics it's the one profession where you are at the mercy of the labor. You're at the mercy of, oh, you know what? This part you need? You know what? This is fantastic. You only need this one part. It's 59 cents. This part is 59 cents.
Of course, with labor.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
And then you're just like, oh, shit. All right. Who did you get a nice email from? Make me feel better.
I got a really nice. And by the way, my mechanic, the best. Sal Lombardo, Main Street, Stouffville, 5401 Main. The best. Never rip you off. Always. Comes in light too.
The only
he is fantastic. No, there's tons.
Not the only mechanic.
Sal Lombardo is the man. Okay. Subject line: a healthy wish at LA meetup. Oh, I was like, oh, this sounds intriguing. I better get on this. Hey Merrick, last week you told Wish to drink warm water with half a lemon to cleanse his liver. Funny, Maddie and I were just talking about this before the show. I did. You'll be happy to know he has heeded your advice. I went to the LA meetup and there was Wish with a lemon in his drink. It was a Hefeweizen, but hey, baby steps. Half season ticket holder, buddy, Team Royal Half. So kind of getting there, Greg.
Yeah.
You're kind of picking it up.
Well, I remembered half of it. I'm like, let me think here. He said something about a lemon. Fuck it. I'll just put it in this beer.
I was so happy. I'm like, oh, wow, it's great, man. My little buddy's doing something for himself. That's right. He's exercising more now, and he's getting with the lemon water, going to alkalize his body, going to cleanse, give his liver a good rinse. Could probably use one around this time of year. No. Well, he gave it a good shot, though.
Something, something, lemon, something.
Water. How about that? Comes out of your tap. Squeeze a lemon in there.
All right, coming up on this oddly timed, truncated, angry wish show, because I'd have to go back out and have the car pass inspection, because, I mean, some of us wait until January, 30th?
30th.
Yeah, 30th. To get the car done. Like an asshole. Dale Mitchell's going to join us to talk about a very interesting story from earlier this week, which, of course, was the San Francisco Bulls folding in season. We'll get the take of a player who experienced this firsthand, and, of course, talk to him about his days with the Marlies as well.
Hey, by the way, Maddie chimes in on the Gmail chat. By the way, get on that.
I am. I'm getting there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm almost there.
His mechanic in his small town. How do you pronounce it?
Washago.
Washago?
Washago.
Where is that? Where is that near Maddie?
It is on the tip of Muskoka.
Very
beautiful.
Nice.
Gorgeous.
Oh, wow.
Population 25.
Is that Lake Rosso? Is that Lake Joseph? Where are you, Maddie?
We're on the Green River, actually.
Very good. Our mechanic was also our mayor. You're serious?
Dead serious. Dead serious.
That's how small a town you're from?
Yes.
You can no longer make fun of me living in Stouffville, bud. No longer. That ship has sailed. Okay, sorry. Tee up the rest of the show, Wish. His mechanic was his mayor.
Well, I'll tell you what there. We could do one of two things. We can fix your tires, or I can pass a law that says you can have tires as bad.
Hang on a second. This budget has to wait. I'm sorry, good people. But Matty Brown's got a fan belt issue. Matty's air conditioning is effed.
I'm sorry,
City Council.
Sorry, I didn't get over to the emergency budget meeting in time. I had to fix a timing belt.
That's a peek into the life of Matt Brown.
Seriously.
It's awesome.
But the question of the day today is actually a pretty interesting one, and we've gotten some very good responses for it so far, which is, when can you judge a trade? Now, we saw last night the Edmonton Oilers and Ben Scrivens. They got the probably the best goaltending performance in Oilers history last night.
One of the best performances in league history last night. Dallas Eakins, by the way, after the game was great. I'm really happy for Ben, but I'm really embarrassed. Summed up the entire game right there.
Right, and like I said on Twitter last night, it was almost like they were hazing him. I mean, it's the only thing. It's the first thing I thought of when I saw all the shots he had to face. 59 saves last night for Scrivens, and he earned them. Man, you watch that game. And in that third period, he definitely earned them, and it was a hell of a performance. When do you judge? When do you judge that deal? When do you judge another deal that we're going to talk about today? Because at the time, it was judged kind of harshly. How do you give up a guy who's a Calder Trophy contender in Corey Conacher for a big, tall, never been a starter named Ben Bishop?
How you do it?
I don't know. No. I gave that trade 2 Milburys at the time on the Milbury scale.
The Milbury scale. I forgot about that.
There's a very good chance.
Milbury scale.
There's a very good chance that this trade could come back and bite Ottawa in the ass, and that you can't judge it quite yet for Tampa. Well, I think now, if you were to reevaluate that trade, it looks like the steal of the century. Conacher's playing some games under 10 minutes. And Ben Bishop is, in my estimation, the leader for the Vezina right now. So the question of the day is, when can you judge a trade? When is it okay to judge a trade? When do you judge trades? PuckDaddyBlog@Yahoo.com, Matt Wyshynski @JeffMerrick on Twitter, #MVSW. When is it okay to judge a trade? Playing with sticks, writes in, depends on the pieces involved. Some trades may take several years to fully judge results, obviously meaning, draft picks, that kind of thing.
Yep.
Let me see here. A few more.
By the way, really quick, and I'm going to get all pretentious and historical on you. Justin Korlick sends in, when players are long dead and gone, I think the Lauren Davis Metro Presti swap was a pretty fair one at the time.
Whoa.
You know why that was an interesting trade? And I'm glad that he brought, I don't know if he just pulled that one out of his hat, but he brought it up. That was in 1954. You know what happened in 1954, Wish?
What's
every
that?
Team in the NHL, all right, can you imagine this happening now? Every team in the NHL sent Chicago a good player. Detroit sent Metro Pristai. Montreal, and I think it just sent him for cash, sent Eddie Litzenberger, who turned out to be the captain of the 1961 Stanley Cup team. It was a team that was owned by Bruce Norris. Oh, look at that, brother of James Norris. Owned by the James Norris, brother of Bruce Norris. Look at that, the Norris brothers owned two teams. So Chicago was so bad, it was so awful that every other NHL team had to send them good players to keep them afloat. Yeah.
Wow.
That's why that one was an interesting trade. I'm glad that I got that on the podcast today.
That's
a
amazing.
Little bit of arcane history.
I from do not Bruce recall that. That's very interesting. This is from Shane Estabrook. When a player in the deal becomes a superstar, a Stanley Cup is won or won when one player changes teams again. That when one player changes teams again is kind of
I don't know about
where
that.
That's where I am on that because
okay.
Because here's the thing. Because now you could take it one of two ways. You can judge the trade on, okay, we'll use the Bishop trade as an example. Okay, Corey Conacher for Bishop. If Corey Conacher gets traded in the offseason to somewhere else,
mm-hmm.
I'll put the cherry on top of the sundae. I'll close the briefcase. I'll say that is the point in which we judge the trade. And I know that that's not the way it goes for a lot of people. I know for a lot of people it's, okay, you trade for an asset, then that asset gets traded,
yeah.
Then that more assets come back,
right.
And all of a sudden it becomes like this crazy family tree of trades that happen, and I don't know if I necessarily want to go down that road. There's one trade in the history of sports that I think is good for that kind of analysis, and it's the Herschel Walker trade. There were so many assets that went from the Vikings to the Cowboys in that trade that it's always fun to kind of like peel back the onion and see what they ended up doing with all of those assets. But if it's like a straight player for player thing, then I kind of judge it differently. I don't need to wait 15 years to see what happens to the third round pick that came back for Corey Conacher.
Is the Herschel Walker trade the reverse Jaromir Jagr to the Washington Capitals trade? Where you go back and go, woof. What was there were a lot of pieces, but what happened?
Oh man, oof. It's no, because I think there were a lot of pieces for Dallas that wound up being good pieces in the trade.
Jagr.
Saying that Jagr in this case is Walker?
Yeah.
Walker had good years for Minnesota. He wasn't a bust for Minnesota. He wasn't Adrian Peterson, but he wasn't a bust.
Right.
But, I mean, the freight they paid for him. But
hang on. Because Jagr refused to do things like, I don't know, line rushes and warm up with his teammates, you think he was a bust in Washington? I don't know what you're talking about.
I never said he wasn't a bust in Washington. I mean, he was a surly misanthrope in Washington.
And
but
then
I mean,
Ted Leonsis said he would never fall in love with a superstar player and hand him the keys of the franchise ever again.
under his breath he said that's someone else's team drafted. That's what he said under his breath.
Okay.
If he drafts him, it's okay.
Okay, gotcha. All right, I'm on board.
No, but I think that's a good measuring point. I also want to repeat something that that Fear the Fin wrote, because I thought this was really really astute and something that I've thought about before as well. And it's about when you judge a trade, and is it I tend to think it's only fair to judge it immediately after it's made when you have more or less the same info as the GMs involved. It's fine to say this trade did or didn't work out after the fact, but using the benefit of hindsight to skewer a GM seems unfair to me. That's really interesting because I kind of agree with it, although, you know, I don't know how to evaluate a trade in that moment as well as you could a year later. But there are definitely times where the snap judgment on a trade has been accurate. And by that I mean when the guy you're trading for has requested more trades in the span of a year than scored playoff goals and you gave up Philip Forsberg for him. I don't remember many people saying the Marty Erat trade was the game breaker, the game changer for the Capitals. I remember a lot of people saying, what are you thinking giving up Forsberg for this guy?
But in that case, we're still talking about actual versus potential. Right, that's why I don't think we can judge that trade just yet. We all think we know what's coming, but we're not there yet. We don't know if we have a good idea of what we think Philip Forsberg is going to turn into with the Nashville Predators, but we still don't know. Hmm. All we know is Washington has a player in the NHL right now. Hmm. Mind you, one they would like to probably get rid of, but nonetheless, they do have a roster player.
Adrian writes in 6 to 12 months, depending on whether it's a UFA or not, or how they fit into a system during a prolonged period. There's a lot of variables. You know, if you change systems, how does it work?
Mm-hmm.
Matt Riegler writes in precognitively, thank you,
wow.
Because it's never as good as it could or should have been. Drunk Peter Puck writes in, years in the future, that Anthony Brodeur for Henrik Samuelsson trade was a steal for the Seattle Devils.
I think it's always shifting. The interesting thing on this one, too, is how do you look at the Phil Kessel trade right now? At the time, it was overwhelming, slam dunk for the Boston Bruins.
Uh-huh.
And I know they won a Stanley Cup that year. How much of a – was it that year or the year after? Or a couple years after. No, it was a couple years after, wasn't it? It wasn't Sagan's rookie year. That was either traded Cabrillet that they got, ended up getting winning the Stanley Cup that year. Not that Cabrillet was a big deal, but to the original point, how do you look at the Phil Kessel deal now? Because right now, the Phil Kessel deal is kind of the, Riley Smith deal for Boston?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, it becomes very interesting now when you say, if it was Phil Kessel for Louis Erickson, Riley Smith, and Dougie Hamilton, what does that trade look like now?
Still a win for Toronto.
Yeah.
I mean, you got a guy who's, penciling 35-40 goals.
Phil Kessel and Rich Peverly for Louis Erickson, Riley Smith, and Dougie Hamilton.
Let's pick it up after we talk to a very interesting guest who I'm sure has a very interesting story, Greg Wyshynski.
He might. We hope.
Sure he will. weeks.
This is a man who was, until earlier this week, a member of the San Francisco Bulls of the ECHL, a former member of the Marlies. He joins us now on the Merrick vs. Wyshynski podcast. He is Dale Mitchell. Hey, what's up, Dale? How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Could be better, but
yeah,
definitely interesting week.
Yeah, curious if you can walk us through a timeline, what happened with the Bulls, and at what point, Dale, did you say to yourself or your teammates, you know what, this thing is headed right for the ditch? Did you get a solid indication, before what happened earlier on this week, or was this week kind of a surprise for you?
It was kind of an ongoing thing. It started a couple, I'd say before Christmas. We didn't get paid for 2 weeks, so we were kind of weary on that because, I mean, you hear those stories in Europe of not getting paid, but yep. When it comes to not getting paid in North America, you're kind of asking questions, right? So we had a team meeting with our coach and one of the owners, and they ended up finding more money and said everything was going to be good. And then this last week, we kind of got a text saying it's up to the league whether or not they want to continue with our team or not. I'm sure they would have to have funded us, but we kind of got the text in the middle of the week last week, and it came to Monday at 11 o'clock whether the league wanted to keep going with us or cease operations. And obviously they decided it wasn't going to work for them.
That's fascinating because I was wondering about why the ECHL didn't just step in and take over the team a la the Phoenix Coyotes in the National Hockey League. So that's an interesting thing. So did you have any inkling this might happen at the beginning of the season? Like when was the first time you said to yourself, this thing might not be working out?
Probably beginning of December, middle of December, when we didn't get paid.
That was it, huh? Wow, okay.
When you didn't get paid for 2 weeks, it's kind of fishy because – I mean, we weren't really getting many fans either. We had just loyal fans that came every game, but I don't know if you've ever seen the Cal Palace. It seats 10,000. So when you get 250 fans, 300 fans a game, stuff is not going right. So
it can kind of look. But I mean, that is a legendary, I mean, not just for athletics, but for entertainment as well. Just as a quick aside, Dale, what was it like playing in, and I guess San Francisco, the Bulls kind of spiffed it up a little bit too, but what was it like playing in a really like a legendary building?
Oh, I mean, I think it's been there since 1930s, I believe. You hear all the stories about that place. It's been through 3 earthquakes. San Jose Sharks played there.
Yep.
The California Golden Seals played there. They hold rodeos every year there. So it was kind of interesting to go to see. And then when you get in there, it's like, unfortunately, the arena was set up as a Bulls, a rodeo stadium, so it wasn't stadium seating. It was kind of pushed back, so the fans would be far away from you, which is the unfortunate part. But it's still in pretty good condition. It's been there for 80 years.
Wow, that's incredible. Who breaks the news to you that the team is folding.
And how? How do you say that to a player?
And how, yeah.
We were called in at 11 o'clock on Monday, and we came in there, and our helmets and gloves were gone, so we knew something wasn't right.
Because
it's their property of theirs, so you knew something wasn't right, and the coach sat us down and told us exactly what happened that morning and what the league decided to do, and the league figured it was way too expensive to keep us going. So, and you know, the coach was he was invested into the team as well, so he was pretty emotional and pretty upset about what was going to happen. And he kind of just kept it short and said, you know, unfortunately, we're not going to be able to continue the season, but I'll make sure I try to find you guys jobs this coming week. So,
wow. Hang on a second. You didn't get to keep your helmets or gloves?
No, that's the property of them. So I guess they send it back to Reebok and get some money back. So
they just go into like the pro return bin at your local hockey store. Okay. Well. So there you go.
Hockey Life, you probably pick up our helmets.
That's right. That's right. Go to Hockey Life here in Toronto. Get Dale Mitchell's helmet, everybody. Dale Mitchell wants his mitts and helmet. Go to Pro Hockey Life. Oh, that's awesome.
I'll probably buy it back off them too, because I don't know if I'll have anything for the summer.
Did you get anything? Like, did you get anything from the Bulls?
If you got traded, you just take your equipment that you brought and the sticks that you used and kind of just kind, you know, some guys had, you know, you just got to use a bag. It's basically like you're getting traded, but everybody's getting traded. Everyone leaves, so.
Yeah.
Wow. It was that kind of situation.
All right. So you personally, what happens after you get this news? Because the way, as we talked about earlier this week, if you were on a two-way deal, an AHL deal, an NHL deal, you just get reassigned. If you were on an ECHL deal, your contract was canceled. You become an unrestricted free agent. So take us through what your next steps were insofar as finding another gig.
So about 1 o'clock that afternoon, they put us, all the ECHL guys, on a free agent list, and all the teams were aware of what was going on. So beside that, they released our phone numbers beside each name, and it was up whether or not the team wanted to contact you and you're interested. So actually, it was a whirlwind afternoon. I had a few calls from different teams, so it was kind of, you know, choosing what team I wanted to go to. And some guys obviously didn't have that luxury, so they were kind of waiting and waiting. And, you know, the coach was really helping guys out too, which was great. But I think that afternoon there was 15 teams that called, so just kind of pick a team and go with it. And South Carolina was, them being first place, I thought that would be the best opportunity for me to go far in playoffs.
So you're with the Sting, you're with the Stingrays now then?
I'm off to South Carolina. It's about a 40-hour drive. So I'm just passing through Little Rock, Arkansas right now.
It's a glorious life. Yeah, you get to see the country. You get to see the country, man.
But Merrick, what a front runner. What an absolute front runner. You know, you could go take your talent someplace that needs you.
You gotta go
pick a first place team.
Forget
it. Wow.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, well, I drove to San Francisco, basically doing a massive loop around the United States of America, so I get to really see it all.
It's pretty sweet. Now, is that something you do on your own? I remember when you were coming up to your draft year, I'm not sure if you're still with Pulver, but Ian used to call me all the time and really sell you in hard. Are you still with an agency? Are you with Ian Pulver, or are you just on your own now?
In that time, you signed with an agent, so I was legally with Ian, and I still, you know, he still works with me. It's kind of a different situation now because I went to Europe actually last year, so he's mostly North American based. Mm-hmm. So he works with, I mean, he's got, his clientele is really big now, but we've been together for 7-8 years, so it's almost a friendship. So I mean, legally we're not together, but he always helps me out whenever he can, and
right.
I know he emailed me after with opportunities to go places, but I felt like the situation was the best for me.
So
we still keep in touch.
But you put this deal together essentially yourself, though.
Yeah, in ECHL, it's different because it's weekly contracts when you're on ECHL. So at any time, a team can release you,
right,
and they don't owe you anything. So you kind of have to see the situation and who's there, if it's going to work out for you or not.
Wow. What was the vibe amongst players? Was it kind of like, hey, happy trails, everybody, let's keep in touch? Or, I mean, what was the vibe like? I can't even wrap my brain around what that is.
Well, we had a good group of guys, and I mean, so in the ECHL too, they also accommodate your living place. So we all live in the same complex. And that week that we had off last week, we hung out together every day, played baseball, and, you know, enjoyed our time in San Francisco. The weather was beautiful all week, so it was about 80 degrees Fahrenheit there. And, you know, guys were upset because we played in a beautiful city. So it's kind of, you know, you hear the snowstorms that are going on up in Toronto, and mm-hmm. guys don't want to go home. And so it was kind of, we kind of put that behind us, and it really hit reality on the Monday that, we had to find jobs. So it was, you couldn't really deal with other guys. You had to kind of fend for yourself sort of thing. So, you know, some guys weren't getting calls, and it was kind of upsetting. You just kind of helped them out a bit. It was tough on Monday, but last week was good, and the guys were dealing with it okay.
And every team you travel, every team you play on, rather, there's always a handful of guys that you'll always keep in touch with. And I'm curious, going back to your days playing junior, I mean, you played with John Tavares and Michael Delzato on that Oshawa team. You played on a Memorial Cup team with the Windsor Spitfires. Cal Clutterbuck would have been on that Oshawa team as well, went over from St. Mike's. Who are some of the guys from junior you still keep in touch with that people would know?
I train at the same facility as John Tavares does in the summer, so I always see him there every day training. But I keep in touch with the Windsor Spitfire guys a lot. 2 years there, with the Memorial Cup run, that's another 2 months on your season, so you're kind of there together for 8-9 months. So I keep in touch with those guys a lot. I go back to Windsor every summer all the time and see the old coaching staff, Bugner and Reichel and DJ Smith, that when he was there. And those are the guys that I talk to. And, you know, that was another good group of guys that I played with as well. So a lot of those Windsor guys, you know, we stay in touch. And I think we're going to have a get-together this summer. So I'll be looking forward to that.
Make sure Taylor Hall pays for everything.
I'm sure that won't be a role. I mean, he's making the big bucks now. So it was kind of funny in junior when you go for lunch and the guy's got $10 as well. I wasn't sure if he had enough, but now I'm really sure he has enough.
he's done all right. He's done all right, though.
He's doing pretty good for himself. I still am sort of fascinated by the idea that a team folds in the middle of a season. Like, as a player, like, what memories do you take from the season? Like, is it just the team folding? Are there things that you can cherish during your however many games with the Bulls this year?
Yeah, I mean, I really couldn't wrap my head around it either, to tell you the truth. Because, I mean, it's 2014. Like, you don't see teams folding now, you know.
Right, yeah.
Owners got money. And, I mean, it was the unfortunate part. It wasn't because the owners had no money. It was they didn't want to pay the fee that the Cal Palace was charging. And I guess it was something astonishing. So they just chose not to pay for it. And that was kind of the upsetting thing, because we could have ended the season. And unfortunately, that wasn't the case. So, I mean, I just take it as I got an opportunity to go to San Francisco. I don't think I ever would have went there if it wasn't for that chance. And I've seen a lot of things that I went to Alcatraz last week, and that's something you got to see if you've ever have an opportunity to go there.
It's funny. I went there in, this would have been, 1994 or 93. And the one thing, Dale, that stunned me about it, because you did the Alcatraz tour, right? You got a tour guide and everything?
Yeah. Okay, so yeah.
Did he tell you about the cold water in the showers?
Yes. They said that they put warm water.
Yeah.
So the guys wouldn't get used to it in case they wanted to escape.
Exactly.
Their body didn't get immune to the cold water. If they tried to escape into the bay.
Blew my mind. I'm with you. If you get anyone listening, if you get a chance to do Alcatraz, it is one of the most fascinating. And you went to Al Capone's. You went to Al Capone's jail cell too, I'm sure.
Yeah, they do. They have an audio tour now, so you put the headset in, and they book you through everything and show you where to go, and the escape that happened, and the riot that happened. It was one of the best things I've seen in my lifetime, for sure.
So I'll be the one to point out that 1 week you went to a place where people died trying to escape, and then the next week you were an unrestricted free agent.
I know. I should have stayed on the island. I have a place to stay.
Oh, that's awesome. Hey, what's been your favorite place? I mean, you're still a young guy. I mean, you're only like 25 years old, Dale, but where's your favorite place that you've played so far?
You know what? You really... when I played for the Marlies, I mean, I grew up in Toronto, and I came from a good organization in Windsor. And, at the time, I was 21, and, you know, after playing the last few years in the East Coast and over in Europe, you really appreciate what you had in Toronto. And maybe I took it for granted a bit about, you know, the things that are off the ice with the room, the dressing room, how they handle themselves with an organization. So I think playing for the Marlies is, I mean, besides from junior winning and having that, but pro hockey, I have to say the Marlies for sure. They have to be the 31st NHL team, they say, in terms of how they, you know, treat the players and, you know, off ice and on ice. It's probably the best place I've played.
Cool. Last one for me, Dale, and thanks for your time, man, today. Is this the most slap-shottiest thing that's happened to you as a professional hockey player?
I know. I think it's funny. I don't even understand what went on. It was kind of because when have you ever heard of a team fold? I mean, I don't know. Maybe minor league baseball, but not in hockey, especially not in North America.
Right.
And not so, not during the season.
No, and now every team in the West clinches the playoffs. So
yep.
There's 9 teams, and now there's 8, all of them clinched. So, I mean, that's – almost throw in a tweet and say congratulations, everybody.
Dale, last one here, and Greg just mentioned, is this the slap-shottiest thing you've ever experienced? How many times over the course of your very young career have you watched the movie Slapshot, and does it ever get old?
It's funny that you say that. If you watch Slapshot, it's the exact comparison of what went on.
Really?
Everything was pretty much the same, and that's the funny thing. So we really watched it a lot this year, like these last few weeks, and guys were like, "Wow, this is exactly what it is." But, I mean, it's funny that they made a movie about that now. So I mean, then now it happened.
That was the mid-70s. Dale, thanks so much for doing this, man. Good luck with the Stingrays. We'll keep in touch.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Dale Mitchell, formerly of the San Francisco Bulls. There, Greg Wyshynski now at the South Carolina Stingrays. He decided to sign with the first-place team.
Yeah. A good opportunity came around to sign with the first-place team.
You know, I could have gone to play for the Sabres, but I thought, you know, I'd take my talents to Chicago and see what the Blackhawks were all about.
Hey, so my friend Jamie Mottram alerted me to something.
What's up?
20 hours from now in Fresno, 18 hours from now in Omaha, Nebraska, 17 hours from now in Chattanooga, Tennessee, all of these times that I'm giving you are the countdowns for when the Taco Bells in those respective cities will start serving breakfast.
That's just what you need.
Dude. A warm waffle wrapped around a hearty sausage patty and fluffy scrambled eggs in the middle, served with a side of sweet syrup, the waffle taco.
You hear that sound? This is your arteries. This is a preview. You hear that in the background?
A warm flour tortilla wrapped up. It's a crunchy, crunch-wrapped sausage, eggy, melty goodness thing.
When you go there, do you bring your own paddles or do they provide them at the restaurant?
Is there actually
a glass break or is it more accessible?
It's the law, I think, that you have to have them there.
It's like it rinks around Canada with the defibs everywhere. Is it kind of like that way with the restaurants you eat?
It's the greatest thing I've ever seen. And I say that as a man who's eaten White Castle breakfast. It's something that shouldn't exist either.
Can we go back to putting lemon in warm water and drinking it every day? I'm really concerned about you, buddy.
How great was Dale Mitchell? What a
yeah, man,
dude! You walk into the room and your helmets and gloves have been removed. Oh my god! Can you imagine
I
that?
Know. Well, see, it's interesting because I think I have spoken to Dale on the radio back when I was doing Leafs Lunch with Waters. I think I had spoken to him once, and that was his draft year. Because I remember Ian Pulver. Whenever I talk to Ian, and I think this was when he was first starting his agency, he sold me in hard on Dale Mitchell. And you know what? As a junior player, I mean, Dale was, and he'll tell you this too, although he's much improved now, was never the best skater. But his hands and, oh my God, he was fantastic. And Maddie, so he's selling me in on Mitchell. He's like, dude, he's got the greatest personality, lovable guy. Maddie knows all these guys, right? Maddie's not just a board op, by the way. One day Maddie's going to be on this side of the microphone. He's going to be a freaking star. And he better hire you and me wherever he goes, by the way, Wish. That's it.
Yeah, right.
That's it for Matt. But he told me, like, dude, you're going to love this guy. He's got a great personality, really charming. And what a great little storyteller, too, Dale Mitchell is.
Yeah.
Everywhere from the San Francisco Bulls to Alcatraz to Slapshot. Ladies and gentlemen, find me somewhere else you get that on a hockey show.
Good stuff, man. Yeah, good stuff from D. Mitch. I call him D. Mitch because I feel like
Oh, is that right?
Now.
You guys down?
Yeah.
You and D. Mitch?
Now. Your boys.
Yeah, well, you know, he's a Etobicoke guy, so he's from, you know, the mean streets of West Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There was a Stouffville tweet that I wanted to read you from Jonathan Hawks. Are all the businesses in Stouffville based on puns? For the love of Joe Coffee House.
Yeah, that's right beside pickle, the, yeah, that's right the beside pickle. The, it's right beside the fickle pickle, yeah.
The
I
fickle
know.
Pickle. but Hawks has a great line. He says, Stouffville has to be a studio backlot. Like, where they film Pleasantville.
Yeah, there's a few of those. Right across from there is my health food store, the Hardy Artichoke. That's where I go and get all my kombucha. Oh, yeah.
And what's teas, the strip club is the...
There's no strip club.
Not the Eager Beaver?
That'd be a good one, though. Oh, that's a great name. Holy
I stole that from somewhere.
Oh, you must have, because, you know, genius steals.
I think it was the strip club in the movie Striptease. Remember that movie with...
I did see that one. Demi Moore. Yeah, I did actually see that one.
Yeah, I think that might have been the Eager Beaver in that movie.
Great name.
That's during Demi Moore's, the middle part of her career, where, of course, she was in Striptease and... One of my favorite movies were movies in which technology existed at the time that seemed futuristic but now seems completely outdated. Disclosure. Remember the movie Disclosure?
Mm-hmm. Never saw it.
Michael Douglas gets sexually harassed by Demi Moore.
Yeah, I'm familiar with it, but...
Yeah, the entire end of the movie takes place in virtual reality.
Ooh.
It is the most terrible shit you've ever seen.
You know what I can never figure out?
What's that?
Why people think that strip clubs are exploitative to women. I think they exploit men.
They totally exploit women.
To me, there's nothing more depressing than the sight of the lonely guy with a stack of $10 bills and a cold beer sitting there staring at women, taking their clothes off, teasing him to take away all of his money.
It's completely insulting. And in fact, when Richard Sherman got that question in the Super Bowl press conference the other day about making it rain, you know, you'd say something about the impressionable young women out there. I'm like... It's their choice. I mean, as long as they're not being forced into sexual slavery or something here, it's a job. And the idea that you should somehow demean a woman for taking that job is preposterous. Like, you're right. I mean, like, a fat, sad sack like me looking to touch a lady for $50.
But you don't touch the
lady. You
stare at a woman, you drink, you get turned on, you empty your wallet, and you go home.
$100 to not touch a lady, and they're the ones that should be mocked and demeaned, right?
I've never understood it. I've never understood the strip club thing. I've played on tons of hockey teams. I've been to tons of strip joints, and I've never understood it. I've always sat there and be like, why the hell am I here? What am I doing here?
I'm so happy you said that. I'm not a strip club guy either. As a hockey writer, occasionally there is a siren song that draws you there from the people that you might be may or not be hanging with.
Oh, you've been to Montreal.
Yeah. I've not been to Club Super Sex though.
Chez Paris?
Yeah, never been to. Okay. No.
During the Canada Cup 1987, that's where the players would hold their team meetings after practice. <I'm> serious. Figure out who the leadership group was.
Yeah, right.
Okay, go ahead. Off the wiki you go.
Simon Sweeney writes in, it's really unfair or clearly trying to do something illegal. This is what about when you judge a trade. When it's really unfair or clearly trying to do something illegal, like the Maple Leafs buying a draft pick from the Lightning while technically trading them Olaf Kolzig.
They did not. I don't know what you're talking about. They did not pay $800,000 for a draft pick.
Yeah. So I guess, yeah, when a trade clearly circumvents the rules or should be illegal or you can smell the stench of old boys network or salary dump or any of that stuff, then yeah, it kind of makes sense.
Who made that trade for Toronto again?
The guy that
used to work at the NHL office, I believe. Yeah, that's Brian.
Yeah.
No. Nothing fishy here. Move on.
A salary cap has completely crippled the trade market. So what we're going to do
is buy a pick or two. the trade.
We're going to circumvent the shit out of it. It's a form of protest.
Oh, by Jonathan Hawks, another great line. I'm pretty sure the strip club is also the fickle pickle. Man, fickle pickle's getting more play on this podcast than I think it ever has. I've never gone there. I looked at the menu once. There's nothing for me there. I could have a cup of coffee or a tea.
There's three things I hate in life. The salary cap. I hate trading people around the holidays. And I hate the sticker price on draft picks. Why are there never any double coupon days for graphics?
Melissa Bergenson writes in, I imagine you'll get a lot of this, but can I please answer, when is it not okay to judge a trade? It's not okay to judge a player for a pick trade 5 years down the road as though it were a player-for-player trade. If the trade hadn't happened, who's to say standings would have ended up exactly the same at the end of the season, causing the lottery odds to end up the exact same? So how can we know that the draft would have gone the same way? Every team creates a butterfly effect. No.
That is true. That is true.
I am willing to follow you guys down the rabbit hole, but not all the way on this one, because there are still times when you know your pick is going to be a lottery pick. There are times when you know your pick is going to be...
Hang on. A what pick?
A lottery pick.
So it's not guaranteed in that spot, in that position.
It's not, but you could still judge it. If a team gives up if a team is around the bubble, it's sniffing around the bubble, we all know it's not a playoff team, but they've decided to delude themselves into believing they're a playoff team, and they trade a one for somebody at the trade deadline who's going to leave as a UFA, you're damn right you could call that a bad trade.
Yeah. See, I think Melissa brings up a really good point, though, because at the on the one hand, you're always evaluating trades, and you're right, and those trades and your perspective on them change daily. I live in Toronto. Since the Kessel deal was made, more ink has been spilled, and you know, more sound has been created, more noise has been made on radio and television about it than any other trade in Maple Leaf history, and it always changes. If you go back and see what people wrote/said when the deal was made, I'm guessing it's pretty different than how they talk about it right now. So on the one hand, you're always judging those trades. But when is the at what point, you know, philosophical, at what point do you say, okay, that trade now is finally done? I think it changes with every single trade. I think every trade is completely different.
How long did you have to wait on Curvers for Niedermeyer?
Right away. but that wasn't Niedermeyer. It was all up to New Jersey to make that pick, too.
It was the pick. Right. And that's what I'm saying, is that there are times when you can say, you can weigh, all right, how much should this guy be worth as far as like a one or a two? You know, have we overpaid right away for this guy? I think the draft pick thing is fair. I do agree essentially that, you know, if you trade for a guy and all of a sudden you go from 17 to 13 or whatever, you know, there are a number of different ways you can say that there is a butterfly effect with draft picks. But there are also times you can say, well, that dude ain't worth a one. And that one's going to be a top five pick and we know it.
It's still up to, in a lot of ways, it's still up to luck and, I don't know, fate, if that exists, for that player, like for the Curvers deal, for example. That could have been Pat Falloon, right? Like, it wasn't going to be Lindros in that position, but there was a chance it could have been Pat Falloon. And it wasn't Niedermeyer, and we look back at it and go,
You know, it's so funny you should bring up Pat Falloon, because I was thinking about Falloon. I was thinking about Gretzky coming out at the beginning of the Dodger Stadium game to such fanfare, and I was thinking to myself, who would be the guy for the Ducks? And then who would be the guy for the Sharks? Like, who would be the franchise legend? Let's say this game was played at the... you know, in Anaheim rather than in L.A. You know, they'd probably still have Gretzky coming out, but like Paul Kariya, like who would be the guy?
That would be a great one. Yeah.
Who would be the guy for the Ducks to come out and get that superstar Hall of Fame treatment? Would it be Kariya?
Steve Ruchin, Keith Carney.
Well, the fan favorite guy would probably be Guy Hebert, right? Like that would be the early franchise guy that everybody loved.
Stu Grimson.
But who would it be for the Sharks? I mean, Falloon was the first famous name they had on the team. It'd be Owen Nolan, probably, right?
Owen Nolan would be, absolutely Owen Nolan.
Not Falloon.
Garpenlof, no, he hit that crossbar. Jamie Baker shouldn't have passed, so not him. Yeah. He should have shot that puck.
I'm guessing it'd be Owen Nolan, right?
Probably.
Right? I guess. Not Roenick. No, not Claude Lemieux.
No. Remember that era? We're bringing in.
Just like Guy Hebert, Arturas Irbe would be another one who would be like treated as a conquering hero if he came out in that role. I'd say either Owen Nolan or Irbe would be the guy.
Yeah.
For the Sharks.
Igor Larionov? Nah.
No. Riegler writes in again, Sharks, Baker, Nolan, Irbe, Ducks, Kariya, Curry, and Ozilinch. I don't think Curry and Ozilinch are in the same league as Kariya.
No, Kariya
on that one.
He has been so silent since he retired. Like, of all the people that are out there that you want to hear from right now, because we hear a lot from a lot of people that, you know, we kind of don't want to hear from. But the one guy to me, since he retired, that you've wanted to hear from, I mean, I can't think of anyone more so than Paul Kariya. Can you? Like, he's the one guy I'm dying to hear from. I've tried to get him on various radio shows before. Nothing.
I've tried him a bunch, too.
Have you tried him a bunch, Maddie? Yeah. Maddie's tried him a bunch.
Well, I haven't. I'll give him a try. I haven't tried him yet.
You give it a shot. Hi, Greg Wyshynski, editor of the Puck Daddy blog.
I know one of your things that you love so much is finding hockey where hockey isn't.
Yeah.
And Paul Kariya is my story for where you don't expect to find hockey. Now, you may expect to find hockey in Maine. That's true,
hockey,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, without question, Maine is a hockey town, a hockey state, rather. Where you don't expect to find hockey is in the very back, the far reaches, the budget bin section of a store that is shaped like a giant blueberry.
Huh? What?
And so in Maine, I was at this store. Uh-huh. It's shaped like a giant blueberry. They sell blueberry pies, blueberry ice cream. It's a blueberry store. I forget exactly where it is, but the thing looks like a blueberry, like literally. Like you can go up and take pictures with it.
All right.
And way in the back of the store, they've got not a shred of hockey anywhere in this store. It's all food and cookbooks and spatulas and blueberry shit. Way in the back of this store, I find
Thunder and Lightning by Phil Esposito.
No, framed Maine Black Bears photo of Paul Kariya during his playing days in the NCAA.
Really, eh?
It was the most random thing I have ever seen hockey-wise in the blueberry store, where people are like, should I get blueberry pie a la mode or just straight blueberry pie to shove in my face? In the back of the store in the bargain bin, it's this one photo framed of Paul Kariya. It's crazy.
Wow. Did you buy it?
Of course not.
Why not?
Yeah.
Are you not a Paul Kariya guy?
2003.
I think I have three Paul Kariya Team Canada jerseys at home. I think I have more jerseys with Paul Kariya on the back than any other jersey.
Paul Kariya helped Jiggy steal Marty's Conn Smythe, so I'll never forgive him for that.
Oh, poor Marty. Yeah, tag days for Marty Brodeur, poor guy.
That could definitely cost him the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that could be it. That's going to be the deciding factor. For sure.
Of course. No, I actually loved Kariya. He was such a damn good player. And just like Lindros, just like LaFontaine is always going to be on my what could have been list. Because, like, I mean, he just got his bell rung so much.
Crushed.
So much.
I know, yeah. Tons. Yeah, one of the great scenes that all of us look for after the Stevens hit, no matter how many times you watch the Stevens hit, what is everybody waiting for when they see Paul Kariya lying on the ice?
What?
The puff of smoke on the visor.
Oh, right.
Right? Like, it was so funny because watching that, I'm like, oh my God, is he dead? And then we saw, like, oh, it was like the biggest relief. Oh my God, he's alive. He's breathing. Mm-hmm. Okay, fine. Because you saw the visor fog up. It's one of the weirdest things I've seen in hockey.
And then he comes back.
Well, you know that story. Because he knew he was concussed, right?
Yeah.
And so he's sitting there in the dressing room, and he hears the doctor coming, and there's no way Doc's going to let him out. So he, like, jumps off the table and goes back on the bench. Now, we applaud moments like that.
Well, clearly it was a time at which, in the National Hockey League, you didn't get concussions, you got cobwebs.
Yeah, just got your bell around. Here,
yeah,
smell this and get back out there, kiddo. Mm-hmm. I've talked to so many players pretty much everyone that have played games where they don't remember a couple of periods. Zero memory.
The last thing I want to talk about today on the show is about taking a piss in public. So Deadspin has a photograph of a Rangers fan in a Ryan Callahan jersey with his dick out by the bathroom where there's a large line, and he's taking a piss.
This last night?
Yeah, not against the wall, mind you.
Uh-huh.
But just on the floor at Yankee Stadium, like on the concrete.
Oh no.
He's got his first off, let's all say
happened. Oh no, I haven't seen this yet.
Yeah, let's all agree that it's very, very cold there. Let's not judge anybody.
Yeah, he may he may have been swimming all day too. Who knows?
Fellas, it was very, very cold last night, all right? But Barry from Deadspin asks the most important question. Why wouldn't you just turn around? Like, why you're against the wall? Like, who hasn't pissed against the wall before?
It's a political statement.
Yeah, he's got his little willy out and he's streaming on the floor. There's a guy he's looking at a guy with a cell phone camera.
Taking a picture of him. And there's a girl taking a picture too, or maybe a video. Who knows?
Wow, it's something, isn't it? But nice that they blacked out his eyes. I'm sure he's completely unidentified.
Yeah, who could this guy? Yeah, if anyone knows him, yeah, I think it's Jim, but not sure.
Hey, Jim,
his eyes.
Put on this Geordi LaForge visor from Star Trek: The Next Generation. I have a feeling this might be you in this picture.
Yeah, I got that reference.
Cool. Yeah, very good. Yeah, but the last thing I want to say about these Stadium Series games, by the way, I did not feel the buzz last night. I watched the third period of the game. Leahy was at the game. He covered it. It was one of those classic hockey games that exists where the excitement solely exists because it's a one-goal game. Otherwise, it was just sort of a shit show, I thought, last night. Which goes to show you that nighttime outdoor hockey kicks ass as long as it's not effing freezing out. That's how I kind of feel about nighttime outdoor hockey. You could do that Dodger Stadium game anywhere in the United States where it's not 6 degrees out. You know, when you're playing the game.
I wonder if part of the reason why I loved Saturday so much is because as we go through the second polar vortex, I wanted to be in California that bad as a reaction to how cold it's been right now here. Mm-hmm. And even watching Sunday's game and then more so watching last night's game, it doesn't make any sense, but I felt cold watching it. Did you feel the same way? Like, I felt uncomfortable. Watching the game last night.
Saturday night,
I felt great. I'm like, this is fantastic. It's the whole idea, like TV producers always say, like, TV shows that are set near water, you know, that are set on beachfront, usually have like a 5-10% bump in audience.
Right.
Just because people, you know, cruise by it. And it's like having fireplace TV. It just feels good watching it.
Without question. I feel you on that, and the time where I really feel cold is when you hear the announcers between periods try to break down the action, and they all have mumble mouth. What did you think, Mike Milbury, of the action in the first period?
Yeah, that was offside. Okay, anyway, back to the action.
Yeah, it sounds like someone filled their mouth with cotton to try to have them sound like, you know, Vito Corleone. Terrible. All right, everybody. That's the show for today. So here's the thing that's going to happen, because we need to talk about the Sochi plans a little
bit. No, we don't. I have to talk about tomorrow's plans first.
Well, first off, Merrick is doing the show by himself tomorrow.
Not by myself.
Okay. Merrick is going to be joined by what we like to call the next great listener participation show.
That's right.
Every 10 minutes?
Well, I'm going to talk to Maddie tonight. We'll feel out, because I'm not sure how long I have on the podcast. I got to do this special thing on Tim and
different
Sid
listeners,
afternoon.
Different blogging friends throughout the show. When I did it sans Merrick, I did it every 10 minutes. But I think tomorrow.
Every 10, okay. Yeah. We could do it that way. That seems like a nice little formula.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the deal. Here's what I want you to do. We made a Gmail account last night. Well, Maddie made a Gmail account. I was having dinner with my dad. MerrickVSWyszynski@gmail.com. Oh, you know, we should have done a Yahoo account. Duh. He's stupid here. Anyway, MerrickVSWyszynski@gmail.com. Make the case why you should be on the show tomorrow.
Okay.
Me and Maddie will go through them.
MerrickVSWyszynski.
Yeah.
@gmail.com.
Esto correcto.
Taking money out of my pocket.
I'm sorry, bud. We need to fix the car, too. Sorry. Double sorry. Make the case why you should be on the show tomorrow.
So that's the show for tomorrow. And then I am off to Sochi on Saturday. We'll figure out like when Merrick and I are doing the show. But the tentative plan right now for me is to try to rustle up Dimitri and hopefully Kostinik and who else out there and kind of participate a little bit insofar as doing in Sochi podcasts that Merrick will also be on in some way, shape, or form. So that's the plan right now. But Merrick and I will also carve out time on our schedules to sit down and talk hockey, too, over the next month. But it should be fun. I'm scared poopless about going to Sochi, by the way. So
are you? I didn't ask you about that because I didn't get the sense that you were scared.
I'm totally am. I'm intimidated by, you know, I'm always intimidated by the job because, like, it's people have been doing these Olympics forever. This is only my third one. I'm scared poopless for not being in an English-speaking nation for the first time.
Dude, you're traveling with a translator. D.C., yeah. Dimitri, come on.
I'm scared poopless because there are people that want to blow up things there in a really bad way.
You live in America, dude. With all due respect, people want to blow things up there, too.
I know. Well,
you feel at home.
You're certainly being a bit of a Jiminy Merrick over here, really boosting my conscience and my confidence.
Come
I appreciate
on, buddy.
That.
Come on. Turn that frown upside down, pal. You'll be fine. Wish, really.
How much of
a statement are you going to make, with all due respect, taking down the editor of Puck Daddy?
It's not so much the... First of all, I don't think that I would be a target necessarily. I
just don't want to be around where
wrong place, wrong time. It's the same reason I don't jump out of a plane. It'll be the one time the chute doesn't open. Mm. That said, I mean, I also have to be wary about wearing my rainbow cut off tie dye shirt, you know, and prancing around with my pink triangle hat.
You're not going to do that?
I guess not. They kind of frown upon it over there.
Hmm. There are some times you got to stand up for what you believe in, Wish.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is one of those times.
All right. Sounds good. I'll get right on it.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening to the show. Please participate in the Merrick Listener Participation Show tomorrow, and then joining us soon for more merriment.
Dude, have a good time in Russia.
Oh, thanks.
Have fun.
Well,
I mean, Olympics, I mean, not just, I mean, as far as resume padding for the career, it's fantastic. Right?
Yeah.
Beijing did wonders for my career, trust me, in 2008, and I'm still surfing on it. But this is a great moment for you. It's a great moment for you. It's a great moment for your family. I'm sure, your family is immensely proud of their son, who's going to document what should be one of the more interesting Olympics that we've seen in recent time. It's funny because you can make the argument that this year's edition of the Winter Games is more about the news than about the sports. Mm-hmm. If you're catching my drift. So you're going to a pretty interesting one right now. Like the one that I did, Beijing, was more about sort of the coming out party for China. And in Russia, they don't want anything coming out while the games are on. So you're going to a pretty interesting Olympics here, Greg Wyshynski. So I'm proud of you. A lot of people are proud of you. Be safe. Drink your lemon water, because I'm sure your liver's going to need a rinse while you're there.
Right.
Be safe, and we love you. Go have a good time. And as Pierre Maguire would say, go have some fun out there. Go have a good time in Sochi. Go on.
Man, he had a moment last night where he was talking to... He had Broussard on his right, and he had two Rangers... I'm sorry, Broussard on his left and two Rangers on his right, and he got done talking to Zuccarello, I think, and he pivoted to talk to Broussard, and it was like... It was like the fastest turn I've ever seen. It was like he was on a swivel, and he goes whoop, and then quickly puts his arm around Broussard and starts talking to him.
Get over here, kiddo.
It's amazing. Go have fun out there.
Yeah. Right. Hey, Warren.
Thanks to Dale Mitchell for an awesome interview today. Dude is a beauty, as they say in the hockey parlance. And make sure that you support him with those struggling upstarts in South Carolina.
Stingrays. Yeah, I don't know how you're going to get by.
I told him if they win the championship, he's coming back on.
Hell yeah, Maddie.
If they win the championship, he should not get his name on the Kelly Cup. He should not.
Yes, he should.
No, he should not.
It's like a trade deadline deal.
Hey, I like that freaking knowledge, by the way. Yeah, I know it's
Kelly
the Kelly Cup.
No, I know.
Yeah.
I know. That's
Kelly Cup, Calder Cup, Stanley Cup. Those are the progression of cups.
What's the Turner Cup for?
Turner Cup is for the CHL.
Look at you go. What's the Memorial Cup for?
Memorial Cup is for juniors.
Asshole.
Anything else?
Juniors, you prick.
The Cup of Life is the World Cup, according to...
it's not actually a cup.
According to Ricky Martin. All right, everybody. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Yeah.